How can business intelligence and data analytics help medical centers in developing countries like Uganda operate more efficiently? We continue our discussion with Dr. Peter Kalaba on this topic today on Mind Matters.
Welcome to Mind Matters, where artificial and natural intelligence meet head on. Here's your host, Robert J. Marks.
Greetings. One of the missions of the Walter Bradley Center is exploring and cultivating ways AI and other advanced technology can be applied in developing countries. We've been having a discussion with Dr. Peter Kalaba from Uganda, and if you haven't listened to the first broadcast, you should go back and listen to it because it'll provide some good foundation for this broadcast. Last time, Dr. Kalaba talked about needles and the lack of needles in Uganda in a case in which he was involved where the blood was there, but the needles weren't there. So children age 5 and under were actually put to death because of lack of supplies. Also, a HIV situation where families had to choose one of their members to be treated, making a Sophie's Choice kind of decision on who would live and who would die. So again, please go listen to the first broadcast because that'll give you a little bit more background on what is happening. Peter, thank you for continuing to talk to us. One of the, there's a number of things that I'd kind of like to talk about. One of the things, as you said at one time, because of these involvements you were in, you ended up with 4 cell phones.
Yes, I did.
And then I learned, and I didn't know this, that you could actually get a cell phone with a card that actually allowed you to use more than one number, which is kind of cool. So could you tell us about why you had 4 cell phones or 4 phone numbers in Uganda?
Well, I'd always told myself I'll never do that. Until I started having to field calls at 3 a.m. in the night, in keeping with having to make Sophie's Choice over those HIV patients. And so I'd get a phone call at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. and on the other side would be, "Dr. Peter, I'm coming to see you today, but I need your help and somebody's crying." And so I figured that, okay, fine, I need a new phone line.
So people were crying because they were coming to you and they said, "We have more than one person with HIV in our family and I can't choose just one."
Yes, and they'd been struggling. I mean, a couple of them already owed me money, quote in quotes, because I'd already been paying for some of their medication and they owed some people in the facility money for advancing them care. They had offered, I used to get an offer to buy a piece of property almost every week. And so they were really struggling but I also needed to sleep.
And I thought doctors during their internships were taught to go without sleep for weeks on time, weeks.
It works in some ways and doesn't work in others. Uh-huh. And so, I mean, I was married. I needed to sleep but I also needed to be on call for my family or for other emergencies.
And you have a wife and 3 lovely daughters. Yes. You needed to spend time with them.
Yes. So I ended up with a second phone line, then a third phone line, just to, to segregate what I could switch off when, so that I could be able to effectively operate. And
now I think in the United States, most physicians would have receptionists that would actually filter the calls that came through. You didn't have that luxury, I suppose.
Well, medicine in Africa is a bit more personal than it is in the United States.
Okay, so it was more being personal than it was having those extra resources.
Yes, but also, I guess, particularly in HIV/AIDS care, you become a keeper of secrets, if I may use that phrase.
Really?
I like to say that.
And the doctor-patient confidentiality sort of thing?
Yes, you become a keeper of secrets and you become a member of a family. I attended baptisms, weddings, funerals. I spoke at graduation ceremonies. I adopted children, quote in quotes. I had to raise up some teenagers. And so people become your friends. And I mean, they moved on from just being your patients, because you knew so much about them that they couldn't share with anybody else.
I see.
And so
I think we have long lost that personal touch in the United States with physicians and patients. I think here it's a much more colder relationship, much more professional, I should say. One of the other things that you mentioned is that doctors working for the government in Uganda don't get paid a lot, and there's been a lot of doctor strikes.
Yes, I think in the last year they've gone on strike 2 or 3 times.
Just in this last year they've gone on strike?
Yes. Too many promises, too little money.
I see.
I think it's one of those rock and hard place things. Is the government doesn't have that much money. The doctors are not paid that well. You face a challenge as a doctor working for the government that you might not be able to educate your children to become doctors.
Oh.
So I do not know how in the end you can solve some of those challenges with greater efficiencies that data analytics and
things. Well, yeah, we're going to get to that.
Could deliver.
Yes.
But yes, it's a challenge. And as I shared with you, is I did participate. I was a survey participant in a piece of research probably 10 years ago where they interviewed members of my graduating class and the 5 classes above us and 5 classes below me.
This is for the medical doctor degree.
Yes, for the medical doctor degree. And, they found out that almost 50 to 75% of our graduating classes for that 7-year, 8-year period were not in the country. I mean, they'd all left to go do something else. I mean, to go to another country, whether it was the United Kingdom or to Asia or to South Africa or something else, they were not practicing it within Uganda. And then to make matters worse, of the 40 or so percent that were still practicing within Uganda, only about 30 to 40%, 25 to 40%, I mean, I need to get the study out, but were seeing patients. The rest were all doing some form of research because I don't want to say that's where the money was, but also that's where the impact probably was, is where you could see something happen when you did something. So I mean, you have Walter Reed, you have John Hopkins, you have Baylor Children's Hospital, you have Case Western. They're out there doing research and running research programs or programs on behalf of USAID.
What's USA? U.S.
United States Agency for International Development.
I see.
And so, those are $3,000 to $6,000, $7,000 a month jobs. Compared to 1 million shillings a month for the government, which is what, $350 a month?
Wow. So the research pays a lot better.
A 10 times factor.
A whole order of magnitude. Wow.
Is sometimes it's a difficult one asking people to look away when that's the choice that they have been presented with. So,
what would you say to somebody that says maybe those hospitals should get out, quit doing research in Uganda so that these doctors would dedicate themselves better to taking care of the Ugandan people?
You know, I think there's a huge debate on the benefit of what the hospitals do in Uganda. I mean, I've read articles where people talk about guinea pigs and how these Ugandans are being used as guinea pigs. And I think that's one side of the story. The other side of the story is I think those hospitals have made a big contribution. Now, it might not be the contribution everyone likes, but I know people who receive care simply because they participate in research. I mean, they're research participants. Okay? Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't receive that care any other way. You know, they have access to the latest and best medications because, well, it's a piece of research going on, but they wouldn't be able to afford it. Nothing would happen. Plus, you have a few centers that have come up because they have primarily been built by using grant funds, which I don't think would exist without that. So I find that debate a bit difficult because we might not totally agree with everything that happens, and nobody really wants to be the guinea pig, but...
Well, that was my first reaction. When I heard all these hospitals were there, I thought, why Uganda?
Yeah, but you know, it's I guess, it's a, it's, I wouldn't want to be the one to have that debate.
to make that situation. Well, let's get down. You are pursuing a graduate degree in information science because you have done some really cool pioneering work applying data analytics and business intelligence to aspects of medical care in Uganda, and they have, my understanding, had striking success. And one of the reasons you're pursuing this master's degree is to see what else you can do. Can you tell us your experience thus far in applying the data analytics to improving medical care in Uganda?
Well, as a caveat, I want to first say that I think the striking success is realizing how much data and analyzing data and using data for decision making would make a difference. I'd like to say that was the biggest lesson learned, because where we apply the data, the healthcare facility is still closed down. I don't want to say too late for it, but it was a bit too late. It had been a facility operated for 7 years.
So you're talking about a specific facility now?
Yes, where we applied it, but it was a great learning point. I think after getting to a point of frustration running my own practice, it was a small 5-6 bed hospital offering antenatal and postnatal care and surgery, and of course we did see patients, we had physicians in there and everything. I did get to that point of frustration. I went off, did my MBA in the Netherlands, and as we were doing that, we had the course on decision sciences.
So you have an MBA also? I didn't know that.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
So we do this course in decision sciences, and as I look at that and work through that and work through the supply chain program also, I realize, well, you know, this I think this is a problem that we have, is we have a lot of information sitting with us. We've just never used it. So along with a classmate of mine who was working at Philips at the time, we got permission to go down and see if we can use the tools we were using, mainly Excel-based tools at that time, is to see if we can improve this outcome for this business. We go down and we just gather in the data from the SQL server, run it through a Palisade program, which is an Excel analytics program, and we built a couple of models, predictive models. As we built them out, we found out, for example, that a few interesting things, like we were running a 24-hour care facility. We find out that we didn't need to have it opened every night, because the patients we had admitted for 6 years all used to come roughly at a certain point in time. And so if you cross that period of time, there was only 6 nights in a year that you'd have a patient show up after that time. So we made a decision on our overnight care just based on data we got. Saved ourselves $35,000 for the year just by doing that.
Wow. And discovered this from the data.
Yes, we never gathered any complaints from patients. It was interesting. No one ever came and knocked. Is the data told us that we had a 6-year record of data. We predicted what would happen. We played around with the model and what it did.
With your data analytics, you also had forecasting in there somewhere.
Yes. Okay. And so we did what it did, and we got an immediate saving that we could apply somewhere else. We then moved on to see how should we place doctors, you know, because we'd have patients complain at certain points in time of the day that they're not being seen. And we had things like that. We started placing doctors based on data. We then analyzed procurement data, because we were at a stage where every month we were throwing away drugs worth $500 a month, $500, $600 a month.
Because it expired? Or?
Yeah, because it had expired and things like that. We moved to the stage where, I mean, two things happened. First of all, our waste became less than $500 a year from $500 a month.
I see.
Secondly, we were able to introduce or optimize and introduce a just-in-time system for drug procurement, because we suddenly could predict based on diagnostics, based on other diagnostic information, everything. We could predict what medication we needed when, you get? So our entire procurement chain started being driven by data. So we had a secondary saving. Is we then knew when we needed to buy certain medicine. And so the number of patients we had who were being disappointed because we didn't have the drugs they needed when they needed it, that almost vanished. You know, we solved almost 95% of that problem. We had this interesting period where we were having a problem with malaria, where we were treating patients for malaria and they kept coming back, you know, to be retreated. And we because we were gathering data and analyzing data, we were able to say, well, something weird is going on here. And we actually ended up reporting that to the malaria consortium, to a friend of a colleague of mine who was doing research in that area. And they were able to find out that they actually had a batch problem with the medication as being ineffective and also a testing problem. And we found that out once we were looking at the data, and we could then say we're having an unusual trend of malaria diagnostics going on here. Is it a person problem? Is it an equipment problem? Is it a disease problem?
Yes.
So, I mean, that very simple system started giving us that information that fed into various things. I mean, there's so much we got which we didn't expect on the front end. We could begin to tell which doctors were performing well and which doctors were not, you know, just based on the type of diagnostics, the diagnosis they were running, the prescriptions.
Tell you what, Peter, our time is kind of running out. Yeah. Could you stay on for a third episode? Yes, the answer is yes.
Yes, I can.
Okay. Well, thank you. We will we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Peter Kalaba next time on Mind Matters.
This has been Mind Matters with your host, Robert J. Marks. Explore more at mindmatters.ai. That's mindmatters.ai. Mind Matters is directed and edited by Austin Egbert. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the speakers. Mind Matters is produced and copyrighted by the Walter Bradley Center for Natural and Artificial Intelligence at Discovery Institute.